Harry, the cost of living. We'll get on to that because we did open with a call out to our listeners on it. They're more than welcome to get in touch as we discuss this 51551 for text and 0870 32 32 32 for WhatsApps. Warnings today. I mean, I went through, you know, a list of goods that basically said the cost of your average dinner went up by 36%. Mm. Warnings today that food products could go up even further again.
Yeah, because the CSO has released some fascinating statistics in relation to changes in food prices, not only food prices for the consumer, but the kind of price that farmers are getting at the farm gate for their products. One of the ones that stood out to me, Charlie Weston and Sally Maloney had a good report about it in The Independent today, was that cattle prices paid at Mart's have increased by 40.4%. In the past year, and also there have been similar price increases for dairy products, including milk and even for more modestly for chickens. And the only one that seems to have gone down seems to be the humble spud. The potato seems to have fallen in value by about 3 or 4%, but other prices have increased dramatically in the past year. Mary Lou MacDonald in the Dáil today was challenging Micheál Martin. What happens with politicians when there are rows over the cost of living, they will always challenge the government.
She was talking yesterday about the €9 bottle of shampoo that has gone up, doubled in price, I think.
And she was talking about a pound of butter now costing almost €5. She also said that people's electricity bills had jumped to €460 a month, €500 a month, when they were half that 2 or 3 years ago. She was saying that the family's weekly shop was now €260 a week. This was somebody who contacted from the public, are well over €1,000 a month. So milk has increased by 17.6% in the past year. Cattle prices have. Potatoes, as I said, have decreased, and vegetables have decreased. But those big increases in relation to beef, in relation to dairy products, right, will have a knock-on effect for the consumer, and we can expect to see higher prices in the supermarkets and in groceries in the weeks and months ahead.
Okay. Barry Ward, butter alone up €1 in the past year. Trying to feed even a modest-sized family on a pretty average income is a struggle. And for anybody who is renting, perhaps, on top of that, it's an even bigger struggle. But, I mean, to deal with the food goods, first of all, what can be done about this? I mean, you know, people could talk about social welfare measures to deal with certain sectors of society to help them with that. But the actual prices, is there anything that can be done with the prices?
Well, the first thing to say is inflation has stabilised and has actually come down to normal levels, and that is progress. It doesn't mean that that's any.
Well, that's the rate of rise levelling off, as opposed to an actual decrease.
It's no help to somebody who's going to the shop and finding it difficult to pay for the pound of butter or the litre of milk.
I have breaking news of deflation for any European Eurovision fans. Ireland have failed to qualify for the Eurovision finals, so That's let the air out of the national tyres there as far as that goes. But sorry, go on.
Come back to me on that note, is that it?
Yeah, no, go on. I'm sorry
to hear that, I must say. But in terms of the cost, one of the things I've noticed is I've definitely noticed increased costs. I think anybody who does their weekly shop sees that. But what I also see is massive discrepancies between the cost of goods from one shop to the next, whether it's a large multiple or a small corner shop or whatever. The cost of that pound of butter or that litre of milk differs hugely. What we don't know, and one of the difficulties I have, is we don't know what the profit margins of most of those big shops are. So you're either a company that is like Tesco or Aldi or Lidl who are coming here and repatriating their profits, or you're a private company like Dunnes, for example, who don't have to publish their profits in the same way. So it's very difficult for the government to assess where that increased cost is going. Is there an extra margin being put on by large retailers, Or is it a situation where, as Harry says, the base costs have increased? Now, I don't have a problem with the cost of cattle going up. That's something that benefits farmers directly, and they deserve the benefit of that. But all the people in between that, from the time that the state gets from the field to the plate, all the people in between, what's their cut? How big is their margin? And is it reasonable?
Okay, I'll come back to that. We are actually going to hear from shoppers in a second. But Sinead, give me your initial reaction to the persistent problem of rising costs in people's trolleys. I mean, is there anything specifically that deals with the cost of goods?
I mean, I just think it's rip off Republic, you know. I mean, people just feel so disheartened by this. And, you know, those of us who are lucky enough to visit other countries in Europe will see the disparity. So, you know, there have to be measures that can be taken to look at this. And I think you have to think about it in the context of people, particularly renting. This week, I moved my daughter into a new place. She moved in with her partner from a house. They were in a room in a shared house, and they moved into a really basic unit in Dublin 12, where there's five units in basically an average suburban size house. And so very little privacy because you've got all these people rammed in. And it's not bad, but it's really, really basic. And she's paying $17.50 a month in rent. And she said she was very lucky. Like, there was basically, that's what studios are hitting now in terms of pricing. So, and she said those studios are simply beds and kitchens. So, like, I think, and honestly, just it was heartbreaking to see that this is what our young people are facing. And they're facing, so I think we have to take those shop costs in context with people who are literally choosing between eating and heating at the moment. And that's, you know, not a place where we should be. I think the supports around energy costs in particular, but across the board, have to be targeted, they have to be effective, and they have to be on the table for this budget cycle.
Okay. Michael McNamara.
Yeah. Yes, Colin?
Yeah, is there any prescription you'd have for looking at the price of goods in the supermarket? Is there any direct intervention that you'd support?
Well, I mean, I'm struck by what Barry Ward said, and I find myself completely in agreement with him, that part of the problem is that we don't know where the profits are being made. Of course, the previous Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnellogue, introduced an agri-food chain bill, and it was to be modelled on other countries, but it unfortunately stopped short of requiring any of the retailers to provide any information that would enable us to know where the profits are being taken. So, you know, while an office has been set up, they don't really have the power to determine very much. I think it would be very useful to know where the profits are being made. In beef, there is, a bubble building up in agriculture at the moment, which could have very negative repercussions for Irish farmers. I mean, it is, of course, great that farmers are being well paid, but the price acceleration is alarming. I mean, nothing rises that fast that doesn't fall, and that would be a concern of mine as somebody who knows, I suppose, that beef trade reasonably well. The other fear that I have is, of course, that there's a proposal now to ban Russian fertilisers, and most of the fertiliser that we import into Ireland and indeed across the European Union comes from Russia or Ukraine. And of course, the industrial output of Ukraine has fallen dramatically, so that's probably going to be that more expensive next year, and that's going to put further pressure on them. That's a major input cost for farmers, whether it's tillage farmers or whether it's farmers who have livestock, and that's going to be a further upward pressure on prices next year that consumers are going to bear if it goes through. Now, Kieran Mullooly is opposing it at the Agriculture Committee, and something I'll be voting against when it goes to plenary, but I expect it's something that will go through as part of the raft of sanctions on Russia, and I think we need to start examining the impact that our policies on Russia and increasing sanctions have, because it's part of what's, it's not all of it, but it's part of what's pushing up prices.
Okay. All right, we'll come back to that, but let's hear from the shoppers themselves. Late Debate's Brian Lally went to talk to prospective purchasers about to have their pockets emptied at a supermarket not too far away.
I'm definitely more aware of prices, but I'm also feeding three kids, so I'm trying to balance that with giving them good stuff. Yeah.
Have you done things like changing brands from the market leader to the own brand? Or
yeah, 100%. I buy a lot more of the Tesco stuff, not just because of price. My kids have got less fussy, so I can kind of sneak it in a bit more. The Tesco Weetabix now without realising, but because I just take it out of the box.
I just noticed they're coming back from the shopping this minute. I'm celiac, and the gluten-free is very expensive, yeah. Very expensive. Vegetables are getting dearer all the time. And there were only two of us.
Yeah.
And today was €110. And the last week it was 88. And that's with the discount cards and all that.
Can I ask, have you noticed prices going up and not coming down?
I have indeed, yes. On everything, particularly on foodstuffs.
Foodstuffs?
Yes, very much so. It's right across the board.
Butter, I use a lot of, that's gone up mad altogether. Coffees, anything that I like is gone up. I am very upset because I can't handle this at all. Yeah. I need me coffee and I need me butter and me biscuits.
And have you had to do something as difficult as change brand of butter or anything like that?
No, I stick to the brands, really. Yeah. I like me nice brands.
Yeah.
You get used to them. Bottle of wine, like, which I like, me old bottle of red wine. And that's gone up on me.
You deserve a treat now at this stage of the game, don't you?
At this stage of my life, I do. I'm inclined to drink more because me butter has gone up, yes.
Dairy stuff like cheese, milk, butter, very expensive.
What was your butter 2 years ago and what's it now?
I used to buy Kerrygold and I don't buy it anymore because it's a lot more expensive. And it's gone up 50, 60 cent. Cheese, meat. Really expensive. And I go to Lidl as well, where things are cheaper. I see people going back, spending money to save money. And they buy something they don't really need, just to get their 10 euro back. So I said, I'm not buying something to save money.
I eat a lot of, like, I'm a vegetarian, so I buy a lot of fruit and a lot of veg. As I said, the only staple I've seen that's made out of plants that's gone up quite a bit is coffee. We buy raw coffee beans, and they've gone up from 20 euro a kilo to nearly 30 euro a kilo now.
I suppose dairy products, butter, milk, chicken then, and I suppose beef.
People are mentioning dairy today to me. The pound of butter has gone up an awful lot.
It has, that and milk, and I suppose you'd notice it if you've a few kids and whatever.
The weather says like this, we wanted to turn on the heat anyway.
Oh, that's it, that's for sure, yeah. Please God, for as long as it lasts anyway.
Shoppers there talking to Brian Lally. We have a few texts in as well. We'll run through a few of them and get the panel's view on how they might be helped. The cost of living crisis, says Patrick, could be solved by a simple vote of the Oireachtas to cut taxes on income, electricity, gas, home heating oil, motor fuel, and include abolishing what Patrick says is the hated carbon tax. This would solve the cost of living without any so-called need for so-called supports. All that's needed is return to more of the people's money to help them. Somebody else texts in to say that I'm on disability allowance of 244 euro a week. 80% of that going on rent for a small room in a house share. Impossible to find a HAP tenancy. People living independently with disability allowance or other fixed social welfare as the only income are not talked about enough. And somebody else texts in to say from the Vincent de Paul, important to note in the context of the increase in food prices that people on low incomes spend a higher percentage of their income on food, hence the need for targeted supports. We're already seeing some parents reducing their food intake so they can feed their children. That's coming from Ness and Vaughan in the St. Vincent de Paul, and of course affected as well in some cases by economies of scale, because if you don't have a car to get to the supermarket to do a large bulk shop, you are shopping in your local shop, which as a convenience shop may have higher costs as well. Let's start with Barry Ward with the what Michael McNamara's prescription there and some of the input costs there. Sanctions, for example, the cost of the increased energy costs and the increased costs of fertiliser. Is it worth looking at Ireland's attitude towards those again?
I confess I don't agree with Michael here. If I've understood him correctly, he's suggesting that because Russia has supplies of fertilizer, we should be relaxing sanctions or punitive measures we've taken up against Russia as the European Union in order to ease our own situation. I couldn't possibly agree with that. The sanctions we place on Russia are really important from an international simple order standpoint. We have to take a stance against Russia. There is a shortage of fertilizer, and I acknowledge that. But the way to deal with it, there is a different way. There are other places where fertilizer can be sourced, other global markets where it can be sourced, and other measures can be taken to reduce the cost, whether that's in relation to grants, for example, for farmers or those who need it in order to grow food. That's fine. The notion that the first place we would turn to alleviate the cost of fertilizer is to reduce sanctions on Russia, I couldn't agree with.
All right. Michael McNamara?
Yeah, no, it's not reducing sanctions. It's that there are more sanctions coming in, which are going to increase the cost of fertilizer or actually ban fertilizer from Russia. But I mean, where do you think we can get it from, Barry? I mean, it all comes from Ukraine and Russia up to now. There aren't that many alternative places that we can get it from.
Well, there are alternatives.
Because of urea, I mean, because they
Russia and Ukraine are not the only fertilizer markets in the world, but that's not the point that I'm making. The same argument goes in relation to increased sanctions. The same logic applies to it. If it's the case that we need to address the cost of fertilizer for farmers, for example, then that's what we do. We don't roll back on sanctions on Russia.
It's just hard to see the sanctions. I mean, I've been listening for 3 years now. I've been listening to people saying that the Russian economy is on the verge of collapse, that Putin is on the verge of dying, and that the Russian army is close, or at least Russia is close to defeat in Ukraine, and none of those things have come to pass. I mean, I think we saw the victory over fascism parade in the 80th anniversary of it in Moscow with Xi Jinping beside him. And anything that we refuse to buy from Russia in the hope that it hurts their economy, the Chinese are quite happy to take up. I mean, their economy is, they're obviously much bigger than Europe.
I want to get a quick...
growing faster. So, I mean, I just don't see that we're hurting ourselves, certainly. That's happening. That might make us feel better about what's happening in Ukraine, but it's not having the effect of damaging Russia to the extent that we had hoped.
All right, Sinead Gibney on that.
Just picking up on the last point on the Vox Pop, and that you emphasised, Colm, around, you know, the cost of being poor, essentially, because people do have to travel further if they need to shop around. And then on top of that, if you don't have the money to pay for example, car insurance or any insurance at the beginning of the year, you have to pay for it in much higher levels over the space of instalments. And there are just so many ways in which we need to see better supports for people, targeted supports for people, public model of childcare, increased disability payment costs, actual free education at primary, secondary and third level. I mean, there's just so many ways in which people are being squeezed and, as I say, having to be forced into a situation where they're either heating or eating in their home. And, you know, the range of supports that were available were not targeted, and we were critical of that for the reason that we believe all of those supports should be targeted and support the people who need it most. But that doesn't mean that they should be removed completely. There have to be ways in which they can be better targeted at people. And then on top of that, that windfall tax that was gained through the energy costs, there's 190 million sitting in an account that has not yet been applied to support people in those additional energy costs that people are paying. And 440,000 homes are now in arrears on energy costs.
One of the points that was brought up in the political debate, Harry, was the junior minister's salaries and the fact that travel and subsistence now would be applicable to junior ministers where it hadn't been heretofore, in order that the expense of travel for junior ministers would be mitigated. It doesn't seem to have gone down well for people who are looking at this, the cost of living being debated in the National Parliament, and the optics of people being awarded a pay rise there, followed by then the government saying that there will be no universal one-off measures to help deal with the cost of living.
Yeah, kind of raises the sceptre or the oft-held accusation that politicians are all feathering their own nests, a kind of a modern version of you know, Nero fiddles while Rome burns. So sometimes it's unfair. Being a politician is a very arduous job. They do get well paid, but in my experience, most of them work very hard to get that. But there are extras that come with high office, and I would certainly say the travel and subsistence allowance that comes on top of a very generous junior minister's salary is something that has invited controversy, and I think rightly so. I think that perhaps it's a kind of a thin argument to justify that extra expense, but it does feed into the, you know, the narrative. It's a kind of the Irish version of the swamp, you know, that the politicians are very wanton in terms of spending other people's money, both on behalf of themselves. And I don't think there's any real truth behind that. But I think once you have examples and egregious examples like the bicycle shed, it does feed into that kind of general cynicism about politicians. And I mean, in fairness to politicians, I don't think it's justified. I mean, they do work exceedingly hard. If you're a TD from the west of Ireland, you know, your whole life is disrupted because every Tuesday you're travelling from the west of Ireland up to Dublin for two nights, going down, and then you're working in your office Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday, more often than not, you're involved in, you know, clinics or going to meetings or hearing representations. The same for Dublin TDs. The only bonus about being a Dublin TD is that you don't have that big bunch of travel during the week. So, I mean, I do defend politicians, but there are times when there are excesses, and that travel and subsistence allowance, I think, might be one of them.
But Barry Ward, would you concede that the adjustment to the pay and conditions of junior ministers looks like splurge on yourself, spruinicus, when it comes to the rest of us, when universal cost of living inputs are being ruled out?
I don't see it through that prism, to be honest with you. The government decision in relation to the one-off grants or assistance for people in relation to specific issues has been knocked off the list because there isn't the same need for it in respect of those issues. So if you go back last year or the year before when we had particular spikes, let's say in energy, and therefore that was reacted to by the government in terms of a specific grant that dealt with electricity costs, for example, that had a cause and effect, if you like, that isn't needed anymore. And of course, you can always take one thing and compare it with another and say, well, isn't that unfair? But There is a cost involved in if you're staying in Dublin, for example, two nights a week, or in the case of junior ministers, it's more likely three or four. There is a substantial cost involved in that, and I actually don't know the details of how much that is. But I know from speaking to my backbench colleagues, when they come to Dublin, they find it difficult to find hotels. They find it difficult to find hotels that work within the allowance given to them by the Oireachtas.
All right, Sinead Gibney, on this, the complaint that is made, and indeed that was made by Mary Lou McDonald, the Sinn Féin leader in the Dáil, that the cost of living is going up, and the perception of government awarding itself a generous pay rise.
Yeah, I mean, I think Harry's right. I mean, we are well paid. We are in a very privileged office, and all of us that I certainly have seen so far, everybody works hard. But I think it is very different to allocating cars and half cars and ministerial offices and junior ministerial offices, to simply curry favours. And that seems to be what it was. I mean, I find it hard to justify the need for a Minister of State for Digitalisation and a separate Minister of State for Digital Transformation. I mean, genuinely, what is that? And half of the junior ministers, I believe, have not even had their responsibilities allocated to them. There's a whole lot of confusion about who's going to what and who's taking what. So to me, there was definitely a feeling in the formation of this government that these were being handed out as party favours. And that's not where that, again, this just speaks back to public trust in our institutions, in our democracy, and in how the government was formed. And it was about getting the numbers, not necessarily how best they can deliver on the responsibilities they have.
All right. Brief response, Barry.
There's no confusion about this. And if you want to talk about public trust, it's eroded by statements like that. The reality is junior ministers' jobs were allocated, but because government departments were adjusted, it takes time for that transformation to take place, and each department has to satisfy that itself is being done right. But every one of those junior ministers is in office and doing the work. And if the powers haven't been delegated to them yet, the senior minister is signing the orders, but the junior minister is still there doing the work, and all of them work hard. So let's not belittle the work that they do with a view to scoring a cheap political point.
All right. We're going to go to the listeners again. Now, we have a fruit and veg shop in Clahean in County Tip. Our price is always the same. Shop local and you spare money and help rural Ireland, says PJ there. Hi, 1 litre of Tesco milk used to cost 65 cent. Now it's 125 cent. That's almost 100%, says Jim. And long before time, the price of beef has risen to new heights. I wonder how any Oireachtas member could live on the average income of a beef farmer in Ireland, which is around the 15,000 euro marks, as another texter. And then Noel texts in to say, B-days, regarding the cost of these, did anyone get to the bottom of it? All right, we'll take a break. Back in a minute.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.